Welcome to Making Work Relationships Work. I'm Dr. Paul White. It is a podcast that I'm doing with a series of guests, and it's part of the Chapman Center series of podcasts. And I want to welcome you today to listen about how to make work relationships healthier and to apply the five languages of appreciation to your work setting. I'm here today in Chicago recording it and have a guest online, Becky Stahl, who's a friend and a colleague, and excited about being able to talk about how she's experienced applying the five languages of appreciation to a variety of settings. Welcome, Becky. How you doing?
Thanks, Dr. White. It's great to be on the call with you today.
Good, good. Well, hey, you and I have known each other for at least 5 years, I think, and you've provided appreciation at work trainings for quite a number of organizations. I just think it'd be helpful for you to give some context and tell a little bit about yourself and your professional background so people sort of know what you've done and what you're doing.
All right. Well, thanks, Paul. And a little bit about myself, I guess, personally. I grew up in the Midwest. I married my college sweetheart, and this year we're going to celebrate our 30th wedding anniversary.
Ah, congratulations.
Thanks. It's a kind of a fun fact. And we're currently living in snowy and beautiful state of Michigan and can't wait for winter to kind of move on to spring. As far as professionally goes, I spent the first part of my career working for a Fortune 500 company in community relations, human resources, and quality systems. And that's really where my love for facilitating training workshops began, helping people grow personally and professionally. And then for the past 20 years, I've been in faith-based work, serving on two church staff teams, leading volunteers, directing a mentoring program for at-risk elementary students, and coordinating with nonprofit agencies to better serve families. And I also enjoy working with nonprofits as a volunteer in different capacities. I started my own business 7 years ago as a leadership coach, trainer, and facilitator out of my passion to help others become their very best, as well as the teams that they're a part of. And I've really enjoyed working with many nonprofit clients for personal, professional, and organizational development. And as far as how I'm connected with appreciation at work, when I read the book, The Five Languages of Appreciation in the Workplace, I immediately took the Motivating by Appreciation inventory. And I really resonated with the book, and I knew it had huge benefits for workplace relationships. I had been both in the corporate and nonprofit arenas, and I had watched how people were longing to know that they were valued and appreciated. And many attempts that I saw at the one-size-fits-all appreciation wasn't really working very well.
Right.
So 7 years ago, I jumped on to become one of the first facilitators, and I've learned and grown so much in my own leadership since that decision, and it's been really fun working with all different kinds of organizations and learning from them, and I'm really just grateful to be a part of the appreciation at work movement.
Oh, cool. Yeah, we're glad to have you as part of the team, that's for sure. And for those of you who don't know, Dr. Chapman and I co-authored The Five Languages of Appreciation in the Workplace and applied the five love languages to work-based relationships, and along with that, we developed an online assessment called the Motivating by Appreciation Inventory, and a code comes with the book to be able to take that. And then have developed some training materials as well called Appreciation at Work Training and Implementation Kit. And all this stuff can be seen at our website, appreciationatwork.com. And it's the word at, not the at sign, but appreciationatwork.com. And that's sort of what Becky's referring to. And it's been fun to see how those concepts can apply to a lot of different kinds of settings. And so Becky worked with a number of different kinds of organizations, both in the corporate and for-profit and government and not-for-profit worlds. How specifically do you see it applying the five languages to nonprofit situations? What goes well? What are some challenges there?
Well, nonprofits are always working hard with clients, donors, and volunteers, and with limited resources most of the time. The appreciation languages are relevant to nonprofits as they can help them save time and money. Leaders don't have to guess and do all of the appreciation then by themselves. And I'll just share two examples how I found it to be relevant for nonprofits. One nonprofit had a Volunteer of the Month award. And after learning that most volunteers don't want to be singled out and come up in front of an audience to receive an award, they stopped giving this award. This type of appreciation was actually backfiring on them. Another example is one nonprofit stopped their appreciation launch as the turnout kept getting lower and lower each year. When they learned that most volunteers don't want to be thanked in a large group setting, that they would rather, it would be more meaningful for a staff member to write a thank you note, serve alongside the volunteer, helping them with a task, or even spend time talking and asking about the volunteer's family or his or her hobby. Individual appreciation was what they learned was more important than the large group event.
Yeah. And in fact, I was at a training this morning for a government community agency. And I always ask the question, how many of you would really prefer not to go up in front of a large group to receive a recognition or attention? And this group sort of blew me away. It was like 90%. Usually it's about, I don't know, 40, 50%, but hardly anybody of this group wanted to go up front. And it becomes problematic when you do that, and it's supposedly to show appreciation, but it's not really a positive experience for the recipient.
Exactly. And yeah, and I think that's one of the things that I've seen in working with nonprofits, those that had specific things that were either related to calling someone out individually or and bringing them up in front of a group, or the bigger events that there's a lot of time and money put into those events to thank volunteers, but it really misses the mark because it's not individually focused. And that's what, you know, that's what the appreciation language is all about, is the individual, getting down to the individual versus the more corporate type group appreciation.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, some people who are listening may say, well, what are you supposed to do if you don't bring people up front? Well, you know, there's some alternatives. I mean, I've had people say, I just would like a handwritten note from the president of the organization or whatever. I can show my family. And you can still announce it, you know, in writing or the intranet or whatever. But making the person come up in front, and they're afraid of tripping, they don't want to have to say anything. I mean, there's a lot of reasons. And so you can still do some of that, but clearly making it easy for them or not anxiety producing and doing something that's more meaningful to them is a better use of your time and energy for sure.
Actually, absolutely, absolutely. And in both cases, what I've noticed is if organizations continue on without focusing on individuals, they could lose volunteers that way because you're missing the connectedness. And really, for volunteer retention, I mean, the appreciation languages are just a must.
Well, let's talk about that, because I've had a struggle, to be honest, in working with nonprofits being willing to invest the money necessary to have their people go through the inventory or read the book where they get a code for the inventory. How have you dealt with that? I mean, have you figured a way to help them out with that?
Well, what I have encouraged is looking at your key volunteers. Who are the key volunteers, at least starting with your key volunteers? Who are the people that, if they were to not show up tomorrow, that your organization would really struggle? And start with your key volunteers, and maybe if you're able to either get them a copy of the book or review the book together, maybe in some volunteer meetings. You know, at least your key volunteers, have them take the inventory and start with those key volunteers, that if you lost them, your organization would really, really take a hit. And so starting there and then inviting them in different ways to reach out to other volunteers. And especially some organizations have key volunteers that are in leadership roles as well, having them then learn about it so that they can start to share with others. And there's a lot that can be observed by working with volunteers, as far as maybe you don't exactly know their language, but you can start to learn by, you know, working together with them. And we do know that, you know, the statistic probably better than me, but what is it, about 50% of the workplace is words of affirmation?
Yeah, about 46%, right.
Yeah. So we're, you know, almost half of any environment that you're in, those people are, you know, folks that you're with volunteering or even on staff are going to have words of affirmation. And so some of those kinds of things are ways that we've been able to encourage nonprofits to take it down to their volunteer level, not just keep it at the staff level.
Right. Another way that I've found helpful is not just for volunteers, but for staff is, although $15 or it dials down to about, you know, $13 a piece to do a code for a person seems like a lot in the not-for-profit world. In the business world, that's peanuts, right? And I found that often you can get somebody, whether or not they're on the board or not, or just a key donor or, you know, friend of the organization, that will do a one-time donation to cover the cost of 20, 25 people, you know, starting with staff. That can work because it's a huge investment. We know that the biggest cost to businesses that's not effective in helping them as an organization is staff turnover. And I find that not-for-profit organizations aren't as clued into that, the cost of losing team members, because it's harder to measure because of not looking at profitability and so forth. But it's huge as far as just loss of momentum and impact to the people you're serving and so forth. Mm-hmm. So you've worked both with not-for-profit and for-profit organizations. Have you noticed anything different in trying to apply the concepts of the appreciation of the five languages between those two, between for-profit and not-for-profit organizations?
I've actually seen what I think are several similarities between for-profit and nonprofits, and I'll just highlight a few of those that I've seen similarities. I think first, team members realize that the appreciation languages build and complement other people development initiatives that they already know and use in their workplace, like DISC, Myers-Briggs, StrengthsFinders, just to name a few, which are widely used in both nonprofit and for-profit. And so the appreciation languages just build and complement what they already know. And so that is just, it's just so well received. And they realize that the appreciation languages are practical, they're easy to implement, and they're really easy to remember about your colleague, regardless of what setting it is, whether it's for-profit or nonprofit.
And regardless of how old you are, too.
Exactly. So. And the other is that peer appreciation is key in many organizations, whether it's for-profit or nonprofit, because more and more collaboration is happening in the workplace. And many times it can be as important or more important for peer appreciation rather than just your supervisor knowing how to appreciate you. Yeah. And this can be a relief for managers and supervisors because they don't have to carry the sole responsibility then for appreciating everyone in their department. And that's true whether it's for-profit or nonprofit.
Yeah, I think you're aware. We did some research this past year comparing generations within the workplace. You know, we've had 185,000 people take our inventory across the world, and we were able to look at younger workers, millennials primarily, and then those that were older to see if there were any differences. And not too much. I mean, words are still high, but quality time does move up for younger workers, and more specifically, that they more focused on collegial or peer relationships. In the old days, there was a saying, people don't leave a job, they leave a manager, a supervisor. That's less and less true now. I mean, it still can be, but younger employees really are more in tune with and concerned about getting along with their colleagues. And so if they've got good, supportive relationships with colleagues, they can endure a not great relationship with their supervisor. And so, like, for the quality time, often I'll tell managers, just because you have somebody on your team that has quality time as their primary language of appreciation doesn't mean that they want time with you. You know, you may be great, you may be wonderful, but the fact is that more and more people are interested in going to lunch with friends or hanging out after work rather than getting individual time with their supervisor. So it's a both and, but like you said, one really positive is it releases sort of the weight of responsibility from a manager and supervisor that they're supposed to do all of this appreciation themselves.
Yeah, and I would have to say that that's probably one of the things that I see happening as far as just amazing goodness. You can almost just feel managers and supervisors are going, when you're working with a team, they're like, wow. It's not like responsibilities are getting less and less for those in leadership. You know, it's usually more and more. And so when they realize this isn't all about me anymore, of having to do it all, it's actually, I mean, I think it's quite encouraging for them, you know, as leaders, and I can sense that, and I hear that all the time. So I would say one other similarity that I see between the for-profits and nonprofits is that many times people never think about appreciation upward.
Mm-hmm.
They just think about it flowing downward. Mm-hmm. And the all about me perspective, if you will.
Right.
I just see many aha moments happening when teams go through this together. They learn about their supervisors and their colleagues. And this is one of my favorite things about the appreciation languages, is that everybody can be involved, even mm-hmm. the new hires.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll share a story that illustrates that. I received a call from a leader recently, and she and her team had done the training probably about 6 months ago. And they started using the Motivating by Appreciation inventory as part of their onboarding process. And when the leader sat down with the new hire to learn about her appreciation languages, this new team member got really choked up because at her previous job, she had never really felt like anybody knew her, you know, appreciated or valued her for who she was. So she was just overwhelmed that this organization wanted to know how to encourage and appreciate her from the very start.
Wow, that's cool. On that issue of flowing downward, having that perspective, one of the things when Dr. Chapman and I first started out around 2010 or so, we did focus primarily on managers and supervisors, but it was fairly quickly we got feedback from people who said, hey, you know, that's good, but I want to know how to encourage and support my colleagues, and I like to know that they value me as well. And so we really fairly quickly changed direction slightly, at least, to include colleagues and peers as well as supervisors and managers. And what we found is that the combination of those two is just powerful. When a person is feeling valued by their colleagues and also hearing or receiving some kind of communication about being valued by the supervisor, it becomes almost like a positive snowball effect. It just grows and grows and grows. And the other thing that's very cool about it is it really frees up how you and where you implement this, because most of the time, and I really mean that, most of the time, we don't start at the top of an organization and sort of bring this down. We usually start in the middle somewhere, that there's a supervisor, a manager, department head or whatever that's read the book, it's interested, they want to do it with their team. We start there and help them implement it. I might come in and do either a keynote for you know, the company or a half-day management training kind of thing to sort of help give them the big picture. And then individual leaders opt in, if you will, that they'd like to take their team through this and use our Appreciation at Work implementation materials. And they start to run it with their group. And then it sort of goes viral from there. It goes to another group and they say, well, why can't we do that? And so they do it and then it goes up and around and all that. But what's fun is that it doesn't require that your supervisor or manager may not, you know, really be interested in this, and doesn't mean that, okay, you got to wait till they get on board. You can start wherever you are, and appreciation could go any direction. And man, that it's really powerful because it's empowering to people, to individuals, right? They don't have to wait for it to be an organizational deal. It's like, okay, we can just start doing this ourselves.
Agreed. And I think that that's another beautiful thing that I love about it too, is that it just takes somebody to get started. You don't even have to be a leader necessarily or manager of a department to bring it to your team and bring it forward. I mean, that's what I love about it. Everybody in the organization can be involved and start from anywhere in the organization. So
yeah, and I'm realizing we maybe sort of started in the middle here, but just to review, the five languages, which are the same in name as the five love languages, but they look differently practically, you know, are words of affirmation is one, quality time, acts of service, tangible gifts, which is not compensation, but it's just small things that show you're getting to know other people, and then even physical touch. And we always have sort of an interesting discussion around that because HR professionals sort of freak out and say, oh, we're going to get a lawsuit taken at us. But using those languages, because not everybody feels appreciated in the same way, right? I mean, that's sort of one of the core concepts.
Mm-hmm.
And tell me, as you've worked with groups and helped them apply this, and, you know, you start to see them communicating authentic appreciation to one another. And that's a key point as well. We're not trying to make people look like they're doing something. We try to help them actually figure out what do they value about one another and communicate it. But when you see that start to happen, what are the results? What kinds of things do you start to see in an organization or in people or teams? What happens?
I've seen several things. And I think the improved relationships and improved morale are the first things that I notice.
Hmm.
There's a deeper level of trust as people start to apply the appreciation to what their colleagues value most. Mm-hmm. And then the next thing I usually see and hear about is improved communication, because team members want to share information more freely and want to learn from others when they feel valued and appreciated by them. And I see this happening whether it's peer-to-peer appreciation or from supervisors to their staff or even from staff to their supervisor upward, if you will. Do you remember the director that I was just mentioning from the previous story about the new team member, the new hire? Well, she also said to me, she said, you know, Becky, we had a positive work environment, and I wanted to bring this training in to help us take it up a notch. Mm. And I had no idea that when the team learned my appreciation languages, how much that would impact me. She said, I didn't know how discouraged and burnt out I was. And when my team learned how to encourage me, it's made a huge difference for me at work. She said, I've been re-energized and that burnout feeling has gone away. And these are the stories that I just love. I mean, getting that phone call to hear about that
charges you, doesn't it?
It's so great. Yeah, I never get tired of it.
Yeah. It's interesting, the term that you used about sort of being discouraged and burnout, because I tend to sometimes interchangeably use appreciation and encouragement. But what I've come to believe, at least, is that they're largely the same actions that we do. But I view appreciation as sort of the time view is of the past, that we appreciate somebody for something they've done or, mm-hmm. you know, demonstrated. And encouragement is coming alongside, either in the present or for the future, because, you know, there are situations where you're working on a project or a task and you just keep encountering barriers and obstacles and you just get worn down and you need some encouragement. And so using the five languages and the actions from those to encourage people in the ways that are meaningful to them can be really powerful. And I love your example about the leader, because, man, who hasn't led an organization and gotten tired and discouraged, if not burned out, you know? And that's where I really agree that this needs to be focused more on, yeah, it'd be good for me to, I'd love to get some appreciation and feel valued, but I need to look around not only to my colleagues, but my supervisor. And I talk to higher level leaders. I mean, business owners, they just feel like, man, it's just a black hole. They don't hear anything. Mm-hmm. And so it's a neat way to be able to do it in an authentic way that's not seeming like you're trying to win their favor or, you know, manipulate the situation.
I've talked to several executive directors of nonprofits, and a lot of them have different titles, but basically that kind of title. And, you know, they report to a board, and I'm always, you know, encouraging them to share their appreciation languages or have me share with their board, because sometimes that's the role of boards, is to encourage their executives. But a lot of times they forget that that's part of their role.
You're being nice. Let me tell you that I have sort of a hard message for board members. It's like, man, you all need to pay attention because, board members are usually volunteers and they're busy people and all that. But you've got to pay attention to your executive leaders and encourage them, because if you don't, I'm not sure who will.
And
it's a key role that they can really grow in, I think.
Absolutely. And you know, like I said, I've just seen a lot of aha moments happening when teams realize that there's this upward thing with it. You know, it's not all just flowing downward. But again, it's really helpful for those that serve on boards to realize that they can play a huge role in appreciating and encouraging their executive director and learning their languages of that executive director and making a huge impact too. You can come from that avenue as well. So, but yeah, I love sharing stories about how those in leadership can be encouraged too and help them kind of be re-energized in their role when others know how to encourage them.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that I've seen that's been encouraging to leaders is that when team members, whether they're frontline workers or frontline supervisors, even mid-level, when they start to take ownership for the culture and for the milieu and the morale of the organization and start to take positive steps to improve it, that's very encouraging to a leader that, you know, okay, I don't have to pull the whole rock up the hill myself, you know.
Absolutely.
And it then sort of re-energizes them and allows them to engage. And like you said, one of the things I think is cool that we try to encourage organizations, if they've done, whether it's the Myers-Briggs or the DISC or the color test or whatever, that the five languages in the results from the MBA inventory really are complementary. So, for example, we did some research with the DISC and also the Myers-Briggs to look at, okay, what's the relationship between, you know, people's preferred languages of appreciation and the personality style? And we found that there isn't any, in the sense that you can't predict a person's language appreciation from if they're a D on the DISC or if they're a, you know, ENFP or whatever it is on the Myers-Briggs and vice versa. But the way they work together is that, for example, in the DISC, it gives you information about for what that person wants to be appreciated. So you're going to communicate appreciation to a D person about leading out and making decisions, but to a C, who's more your detail-oriented person, about being really detailed with documentation and making sure things are done right. And so they work together. But then the five languages tells you how to communicate that appreciation, that one person may really value an act of service, that you're helping them out with a project they're having a hard time with, or a small gift like bringing in their favorite coffee. Mm-hmm. So the two really work together. I think we're still helping organizations see the connectedness of that so that it helps bring more value actually from the other inventory, so that you didn't invest just a one and done kind of thing on the DISC or whatever it was, but that it can build together with the five languages to continue to have impact.
Absolutely, because there is that piece of where we all are different and unique, and we have to learn to be able to get along together regardless of that. And I feel like the appreciation languages helps people be able to do that regardless of their differences in personalities and work styles. And I do love that about it. So
yeah. Well, as you've worked with different groups, are there any other key lessons that you've learned either in, you know, watching people try to apply it or as you're leading groups through it? What are just some things that you found that help make it go better or things that, you know, you want to avoid?
Well, I think first, regardless of the size of the team or the organization, I see it having a positive impact on the culture. And it just takes one person, like we talked about, to bring it to their work group or their team and begin learning how to do it individually with appreciation. And so it doesn't matter the size of the team or the organization. It just takes one person. I think the second thing that I've learned, whether it's a high-functioning team and a positive work environment, kind of like the story that I just shared, or a dysfunctional and toxic environment, I've seen positive impact happen for both.
Really?
Yeah, and when people embrace and learn how to appreciate each other in the language that's most preferred by that, you know, coworker, the high-functioning team gets even better, and the more dysfunctional teams begin, I see healing begin to take place in those relationships.
Well, you know, it's interesting you mentioned that because I've worked in settings. Actually, I was brought into one national organization where I was doing a bunch of call centers across the country and training. And we hit this one and it was just like, this was a pretty toxic place. And we actually had to back off of the appreciation stuff first because there was poor communication. There was a huge amount of distrust and feelings of disrespect. And we sort of had to work at that first and then bring it in. But one of the things I think that's interesting about the five languages is that it forces you to view things from other people's perspective, right? Because the issue is as we teach and train people, it's that you want to help people learn how to communicate appreciation in the ways that are meaningful to that person.
Right.
And so not everybody values words or a note, or not everybody really wants to spend time with their colleagues. Not everybody wants to have somebody help them on a task. And most of us, we sort of at least initially respond to show appreciation in the language that's important to us. But I tell people that you have to take a look at what's important to them. And if you're going to grow as a leader, you have to learn how to lead people who are different than you. Otherwise, you have a bunch of little mini-yous following you. You may be great, but you know you have to have different skill sets and personality types. And I think the five languages concept sort of, if people take it to heart, forces you to think about what's important to them, not just what's important to me.
Right.
And it's really about the recipient, not so much the person who's communicating it.
Well, and I have a great story to share based on what we're talking about here for the differences in leaders. So I had a manager walk into a workshop recently, and she came up to me and she says, "I sure hope you can fix our team because we don't get along very well at all."
Oh, well, we're good at that. We're good at fixing other people, aren't we?
And so I was like, all righty, well, let's do this. So
right.
As this team made a group profile and they all mapped out their appreciation languages, we do them on big flip charts so everybody can see what your colleagues' appreciation languages are. Right. When this leader saw that a whole bunch of her team had acts of service, It was her blind spot as a leader.
Right.
It was one of those aha moments because this leader did not have acts of service as how she wanted to be appreciated.
Right.
So she didn't do this for others on her team.
Yeah.
And all this team wanted was for her to jump in every once in a while and help them with some of the tasks when there was really big projects that they were all working on. And her eyes were opened as a leader, and she continues to thank me to this day for helping her team kind of make a big comeback because they really didn't like her as a leader. And it's really cool to see how morale has been boosted, and it's just a really fantastic story. But it was all about kind of that visual of that leader scene when her whole team was mapped out. You know, it was her least valued language.
Right.
And it was a blind spot for her because she didn't want people to do it for her. So she thought, well, I won't do it for others. But she was really missing her team. And it's really powerful when groups are able to do that.
Yeah. And just to follow up on that and explain to people. So in the inventory, we identify each person's primary language of appreciation, what's most important to them, secondary, your secondary language, and then their least valued language, which, as Becky stated, is often our blind spot. It's the one, it's not a weakness. It's just something we don't think about. It's not that important to us. So for this leader, it was acts of service, and that just didn't really do much for her. But that then creates a blind spot for you for the people that you work with on your team, that those that have that language, acts of service in this case, as their primary language, you're just totally missing them. And you can send them cards, you can tell them whatever you want, you can get them birthday gifts, whatever. But if you don't help them out, especially, and I love your example, because what we find is acts of service is not really rescuing a low-performing colleague. Often it's those time crunch times when you got a deadline and you're pushing to meet it and you're working hard and late to do it. What's something somebody could do to help you out and, mm-hmm. and help achieve that goal? And it could be anything from bringing you lunch or dinner so you can keep on task, or doing some of the other sort of more menial tasks that other people could do so you can stay focused on the project, or maybe run interference for you for phone calls and that kind of stuff so you don't get interrupted. And doing that, even though it's not your responsibility or whatever, sends a huge message to people for which acts of service is important. And that's in the general workforce, that's about 22-24% of the workforce. So it's almost anywhere from a quarter to a fifth of the workforce. And I had one leader tell me, he said, "My language is get her done." He said, "Don't tell me stuff. Don't give me stuff. Just help me get things done. I know you're on my team." And so it's a great example of, man, if you're missing one another, and it's true for all of us. If people send us messages in ways that aren't meaningful to us, we sort of get it, but it doesn't really do anything for us. And sometimes we begin to resent that, you know, why don't you help me out? Because that's what's important to us.
Mm-hmm. And it's just such an aha moment, and for a leader and for the team, because the team could see it too. It wasn't like, it was just like everybody could see it. Like, well, this is obvious. And it was a beautiful thing. And what a morale booster then when she's able to recognize it. But then they also learned about her as well as a leader. So mm-hmm. it was definitely the give and take. And I just love being able to have teams do that and see it, because I don't even have to say anything. It's like they figure it out themselves when we map it out. I love that.
Yeah, and it also relieves a little bit of pressure in the sense that it's not like she's a mean person. She just never thought about this. And so it didn't enter her consciousness as a choice. And she wasn't like ignoring it. It just, you know, didn't occur to her. And by, For those of you that are married, congratulations to you, Becky. My wife and I, we're on at 39 and a half, so we're doing 40 this year. And
oh, wow.
In fact, today I had a woman come up afterwards after our training. She said, how do you do this with your husband? And I said, well, first you pray. But because we're yep. we're sort of thick-headed, but man, it's so important for all of us. But I think for us guys, especially, we seem to forget that people are different than us and that what motivates or makes me feel valued isn't necessarily what is true for other people as well.
Absolutely.
Tell me this, given the fact that you've worked with a number of nonprofits, ministries, does appreciation differ in a ministry setting, or what would you want to communicate to leaders of nonprofits and ministries about appreciation? Because to be honest, I find that they're a little bit slow to get on board. I mean, we have been pursued hard and fast by major corporate America and businesses and so forth. But what message do leaders of nonprofits need to hear?
Well, I think the first point is particularly those that are ministry teams, and a lot of nonprofits, not all of them would be classified as ministry teams, but I would just say that for the ministry teams and for those nonprofits that are very people-oriented, focusing on people, that for them to take the time as a team to learn about each other's appreciation languages, because I've worked with several teams where there's so much caring being given out to everyone outside of the team, that those on staff get burnt out and discouraged because there's no focus on caring for each other on the ministry staff team. And I've been on two church staff teams myself, and I've seen where the burnout can happen and discouragement because you're pouring out so much for others, but you've got to be able to take the time to know about your others that you can encourage and come alongside in the way that's most important to them, not the way that's most important to you. Because eventually the burnout and discouragement causes people to leave, and that's a sad thing.
Yeah, let me just say that I've observed as I've participated in and been involved with ministries as well that, there's always more to do than what you have time and energy. And so a pattern can become that you just, even when things are going well, I mean, success sometimes breeds, more things to do.
Right.
And you just keep asking people to do stuff. And bless their hearts, I mean, people will give and give and give beyond really what's good for them. And they never hear anything positive, potentially. And so they burn out. I mean, literally, you just sort of see them sort of wither away in front of your eyes. And we've got to take care of our people. It's a sad story, but in working in the area of appreciation, I'll speak and I'll have people come up at breaks and afterwards, and they'll say, give me stories about how bad their workplace is or what a jerk their boss is. So I wound up doing research on toxic workplaces. And unfortunately, the worst stories, and I'm not making this up, the worst stories came out of churches and ministries about how poorly people were treated. And it just broke my heart because it doesn't need to happen and it shouldn't happen. But we've got to, like you said, take the time to learn about one another and care for one another. It's hard because that means you're not doing something else, right? And so you've got to sort of stop and, recharge the troops a little bit.
Yeah, I'll share a story. I was recently with a very dysfunctional church ministry team, and I could sense the tension when I walked in. I had been warned and invited in by one of the denomination supervisors, and this was the reason that, they wanted to try the appreciation languages, because they were in search of something powerful to help their staff team. And by the time we were finished learning and sharing about their languages, I could just see that people were encouraged just by the fact that they were sharing with each other. And people were laughing and joking. And it was like this heavy fog was lifted off the team. I can't explain it other than they're so practical and easy to apply and understand. And once you share individually and you get people around a table, they could see the goodness happening right there just by having the time to share individually about what was encouraging to them. It was like a joy to be involved in seeing this fog lift off this team. It was really powerful.
That is cool. Yeah, but you must be a great leader because I don't see that happen very often for me. I mean, it takes longer. I see what happens, and what is interesting is that if people are committed to applying these principles over time, part of it, you know, when you're in a negative environment, there's sort of this cynicism, lack of trust. Do you really mean this? And mm-hmm. part of the way you get past that is you have to demonstrate it over time versus just sort of a, you know, this is the flavor of the month kind of training and thing we're doing.
Right.
And so when we help people follow up and incorporate it into their team meetings and their communication, all that, it's amazing how really small acts over time can make a huge difference.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I would say also just to build on what you asked as far as the are there key points for ministry settings, I would say the second point then would be that because volunteers are the key to the success of ministry for the most part, I mean, getting it done, that it's really critical for ministry teams to learn about their volunteers' preferred languages. And like we had talked about at the beginning, you know, large appreciation events are nice and they help with social connectedness, but it's going to miss the mark for many of the volunteers because it's not on an individual level. Plus, it's tons of work and money to pull off these large events. So if anyone listening leads volunteer teams, start with your key volunteers first. Think about what it would be like if they weren't to show up or they're to leave, would there be a big void? And if so, then prioritize learning and start with those key volunteers and their appreciation languages, and then you can build from there. But I just feel like the volunteers are key to ministry settings, and you can't ignore the individual appreciation with those key volunteers. And appreciation languages are fantastic and are a must for volunteer retention.
Yeah, good word, good word. Thank you. So are there other foundational points that you've learned that you think, man, if I'm going to share one or two things with a group of people about appreciation and how to make it work, regardless whether it's for-profit or not-for-profit, what do you think makes this work? What's important here?
Well, I think what I believe is a foundational point about appreciation is that every person that you work with matters.
Mm-hmm.
And each colleague helps make up the most important asset of the organization, and that is people. And so each person that you work with wants to know that he or she is valued and appreciated.
Yeah. Have you ever met anybody that doesn't want to be appreciated?
No.
No. I mean, the point is
we're
it's sort of universal.
We're encouraged. There's not one person that can't use encouragement. Again, interchangeably using the words, there's not one person on earth who couldn't be encouraged.
Yeah.
And regardless of their title or role. I mean, I see all kinds of folks in the workshops, and regardless of their title or role, they're right in there wanting to share about how they want to be appreciated.
Right.
I'd love to share this quick story because I think it really illustrates that every person in the organization matters, and every person wants to know that they value and are can be encouraged. So I was in a meeting with a CEO and HR director of a small business, and we were talking about the training and trying to figure out if everyone in their company should attend the training or not. There are 40 people in the company, and the CEO wasn't sure if the warehouse team should attend or not. He was kind of questioning whether it would be valuable and a good return on the investment from the time of them being away, and he's like, I'm not really sure they want to come. Yeah. Well, the HR director and I kind of looked at each other because we were both like, everyone you work with matters, and they were this whole concept, and so we did have the warehouse team attend, and we sat folks, all different departments cross-functionally so people could know and learn about each other. And when the team was able to learn about the CEO, his primary language, as well as everyone in the warehouse, there was so much chatter and goodness going on. It was so cool to watch it all transpire. And afterwards, several people said how they had never, ever thought about needing to appreciate their own boss, or even the CEO. And it was, again, those appreciation upward aha moments, like no one ever had thought about it. And then one of the guys at the very end, like I was packing up, I was almost packed up, ready to leave, and one of the guys from the warehouse came up to me, and he said, you know, I was really skeptical about this because I don't use a computer. He said, and taking the inventory on the computer made me nervous. He said, But this was one of the best days of my time working here, and I've been here a long time. That I learned so much about others, and I know that we can do a better job encouraging and caring about each other. I was like, it was just really, really powerful. I mean, to be able to see the warehouse team engaged, hear this guy's comments, and then the CEO just kind of was blown away about how just having people sit cross-functionally at tables, how much people just loved that. There's this power in, you know, people being able to share about how they can be encouraged.
Yeah, and one of the things about that sitting with other team members that I like and have learned about appreciation is that it can go any direction, right? Not only up and down, but it can go sideways. And
absolutely,
one of the things I give a lot of examples of across different teams or departments. I always ask, what one department do you want to make sure you're on the right side of, right? And it's IT, right? Because if your computer goes down, you know, you're stuck. And then sort of the second one is HR or payroll, and then facilities, because if you got something broke, it needs to be fixed. And this model can be used across departments. So you want to show appreciation to the IT person that comes and helps you out versus avoiding you and putting you lower on the list because they're afraid you're going to yell at them or you'll get grumpy. And it just, because it is person to person, it's not organizational, right? It's not top down. It's not from the HR department to everybody, but it's from whomever. And it could be from the receptionist to the executive vice president or whatever. And it's very freeing. And I think it's also empowering. And I know a lot of younger employees value that, that they don't want to have a position or title. They don't mind that, but they don't want to have that in order to make a difference. And so I think it works out really well.
Absolutely. I never get tired of the stories, the positive impact, and seeing the goodness of, kind of back to what I talked about as far as what I love about the appreciation languages, is that everybody can be involved. It's not just something that leadership does. It's everybody in the organization being able to be empowered and have an impact on the people around them.
Right, right. Well, hey, we've got just a few minutes left, and I'm going to let you pick a couple things. Either if you want to talk about some generational differences you see, or with the influx of remote workers. But clearly, once you also talk about, you know, if somebody wants to start to implement this, what do they do? So pick a couple of those and tell us what your thoughts.
Oh, boy. I guess one of the things that I've seen, I would just talk about the generational barriers. I think that keeps coming up quite a bit. And you touched on it a little bit with younger and older generations. And I really think what we're seeing and finding is it's just small tweaks with appreciation that matters. For example, the younger generation, like you had said, quality time is more important for them with their colleagues rather than with their supervisor. And with words of affirmation, they want it more frequently and timely. It's really important to the younger generation. And sometimes with the older generation, they would rather have quality time and feedback from their direct supervisor. Those are just important nuances, but that's what's great. I was in a recent training, and there was a team member in her late 60s, and there was a brand new team member in her early 20s sitting at the table together. And I heard them say to each other, "Wow, we have the same appreciation languages. Words of affirmation, who knew?" And, you know, just being able to find that they had something in common. Well, we do have something in common. I heard them talk further, and the younger 20-something team member was offering to help her, you know, senior coworker with a project she was working on her computer. And I just love it because they can see common, you know, it's bringing the generations together and breaking it down at the same time, because they're seeing that, okay, we have some differences, but not necessarily that big of one. So
right. Yeah, and it's interesting on the research we did that the frequencies of what languages people value are pretty much the same. They differ just a little bit, but there's not a huge difference. And so what we found is that it's the languages are really both cross-cultural and cross-generational, but you have to get the specific actions right, because 20-something guys don't give a rip about a handwritten note, but they do want to hear back quickly through a text or an email or a voicemail within the next day or so about what they've done that you value. So it's getting that specific action right that's really important.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think you had said, well, what is there some closing comments as far as a first step? I would just say, like we talked about earlier, doesn't matter where you are in the organization or what your role is, but you can make a difference by getting the recently revised copy that's just out of the five languages, and there's a free access code, taking the inventory and getting started on knowing your own languages, and you can start from there. And then, obviously, we've got facilitators around the country that love to do trainings. I love to do trainings, but somebody can start right where they are with getting the book, taking the inventory, and knowing their own languages, and make a difference right for the team that they're on, wherever they are in the organization.
Yeah, I love that. And people often ask, they're like, oh, how do I sort of share this with people? I say, well, hey, have the book on your desk. And or it maybe comes up in a conversation saying, hey, I've been reading this and found it really to be valuable and interesting. And if you're interested, I can share this. You know, our book, Sync or Swim, and it's S-Y-N-C or Swim, is a story version of this. It's sort of like Who Moved My Cheese that I love. It's just a fun story that sort of introduces a concept for people that don't like business principle books. And it's like a short 1 hour read. So it's just telling the story and almost just starting where you are. And it could just be with the people that you work with. You start practicing, sharing appreciation, and you're going to see them light up and be encouraged. And they may ask you questions and you say, hey, yeah, I'm sort of learning this from this book, and start there.
Absolutely.
Well, Becky, this has been great. I really appreciate you taking the time to share your thoughts and experiences with us. And I so much appreciate, and it's always hard for me to use that word now, but I do appreciate you and just being with us on our team to help apply this. And it's encouraging. We're selling more books every month and every year than we are the prior years. And we're at about, I don't know, right now about 350,000 books, and it's in 17 languages. And the inventory's in, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 languages, Spanish, Chinese, and so forth. And so if people are interested, they can find out more at our website, appreciationatwork.com. It's just appreciationatwork.com. Hopefully we'll be able to help you out, and tune in again. We're going to be talking to others who've had interesting experiences in applying the five language appreciation in a lot of different work settings. So thanks for listening today, and have a great rest of the day.